Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathy Kay and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, October 26, 2018, the 10 a.m. East Coast meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 148, the fourth paragraph down. Beginning the other day, an approach was made, and we will be reading through the end of the chapter, which includes five paragraphs. Today's readers are CJH reading the 12 steps, Penny LC reading the 12 traditions, and reading the text are Julie EB, John K, and Jordan L. Our newcomer greeter will be Melanie C, and our share IDs for yesterday and this morning. Yesterday, Thursday, October 25th, 10 a.m., the reference number is 12,100, and for this morning, October 26th, 7 a.m., the reference number is 12,103. The OA preamble states, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask CJH to read the 12 steps of OA.
Thanks, Kathy. This is CJH, compulsive eater in Reston, Virginia. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me be of service. I pass.
Thank you, CJH. And I will now ask Penny LC to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning, Kathy. Thanks for your service and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny LC, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. And these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you, Penny L.C. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or several from the literature, then stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. When you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 148, the fourth paragraph down, and I will ask Julie E.B. to get us started.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered by the grace of God in Colorado, today coming to you from Massachusetts. Okay, here we go. See if I can get this going. The other day, an approach was made to the vice president of a large industrial concern. He remarked, "I'm mighty glad you fellows got over your drinking, but the policy of this company is not to interfere with the habits of our employees. If a man drinks so much that his job suffers, we fire him. I don't see how you can be of any help to us, for, as you see, we don't have any alcoholic problem. The same company spends millions for research each year. The cost of their production is figured to a fine decimal point. They have recreational facilities. There is company insurance. There is a real interest, both humanitarian and business, in the well-being of employees. But alcoholism, well, they just don't believe they have it. Perhaps this is a typical attitude. We who have collectively seen a great deal of business life, at least from the alcoholic angle, had to smile at this gentleman's sincere opinion. He might be shocked if he knew how much alcoholism is costing his organization a year. that company may harbor many actual or potential alcoholics. We believe that managers of large enterprises often have little idea how prevalent this problem is. Even if you feel your organization has no alcoholic problem, it might pay to take another look down the line. You may make some interesting discoveries. Of course, this chapter refers to alcoholics, sick people, deranged men. What our friend, the vice president, had in mind was the habitual or whoopee drinker. As to them, his policy is undoubtedly sound, but he did not distinguish between such people and the alcoholic. It is not to be expected that an alcoholic employee will receive a disproportionate amount of time and attention. He should not be made a favorite. The right kind of man, the kind who recovers, will not want this sort of thing. He will not impose. Far from it. He will work like the devil and thank you to his dying day. Today I own a little company. There are two alcoholic employees who produce as much as five normal salesmen. But why not? They have a new attitude, and they have been saved from a living death. I have enjoyed every moment spent in getting them straightened out. Thanks for letting me share. Once again, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered, one day at a time. I was very much struck by the first meeting this morning, by a share that I heard about this text, about how this is a disease of more and best. And so I think about being with those who are still suffering in the disease, and I remember when it seemed impossible to live in any other way. What would happen is that I would have occasion as long as I was looking for more and best, there was never enough in this world. Food was never enough. Other people, places, and things were never enough. Life was never enough. As I say, my nerves were on the outside. It seemed like constantly exposed. And so I always was living in the shame of never being enough. And food was not my problem. Food was where I looked to for a solution to my pain. But the food was still shouting out to me that I'm powerless and somehow never enough. I used food to keep myself in a world where more and best might make me enough. And so I strived, and I had straight A's, and I had a college scholarship, and I was well-liked and regarded and went to the top of my field in many ways through people-pleasing. But there was no connection between who I was on the outside and who I was on the inside. And at the end of every day, and sometimes in the middle, I would just have this empty hole, and I would seek to fill it with food, or I would seek to fill it with restricting and dieting and perfecting how I looked on the outside. But I could never reach more. I could never reach best. And so once again, these things would pull me down. Better now, living in the solution of enough and practicing every day with food. Okay, I've had enough. And with life, okay, I've been enough. I crawled out of the basement of my disease with a simple affirmation. I will be who I am, and that is enough. And as my counselor would have added, why not be yourself? Everyone else is taken. And so those in my life can see today that I began changing by clinging to that notion of being enough. My lower power said I was not enough, but my higher power said to me, no, what if you're enough? What if you're enough? What if you have enough?
Instead of curing AIDS, or instead of focusing on child sex slaves, that you just focused on you, because you matter more than they do. You're the best. and all
some
the natural
days, I
Leia, could you mute the line for us? Julie, I'm sorry. We'll give you a few more seconds. Would you like to speak?
Can you hear me?
Okay, Julie.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, good. Do you want to speak for
a few
more
seconds?
Yeah, let
me just say one more. Yeah, a few more. So anyway, some days I believed I'll be who I am and that's enough. And some days I just act as if. But it has changed my life, my body, my relationships, my ability to connect with me and others, my move from self-reliance to God-reliance, my ability to thrive at work, and my peace of mind. And so today I'm working for an employer and a job that I tried for 3 times without getting until I found recovery, discovered who I was, and could connect with a God who found me to be enough and in the world as if I was enough. And I don't need more and the best. I try for progress, onward movement towards a goal, not perfection. And it's a life worth living. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Okay, who would like to share on what Julie read?
Dorita P.
Dorita P.
Lynn S.
Lynn S.
Lisa J.R.
Lisa J.R. Take a few more. Okay, we'll start with these three. So I have Dorita P., Lynn S., and Lisa J.R. Please go ahead, Dorita.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your service. I can laugh at that manager who said, or any manager who says that they don't have that problem. You know, some of us, you know, our problem is manifested in obesity or anorexia. Maybe that may be obvious in some people, but costing a company millions of dollars. I could just remember when I was working and when I was in the disease, I would eat so much. I would eat so much the night before that, you know, and this particular time that I'm thinking of, I was working day shift, and I had to be at work at like 6:30 a.m. And, you know, a lot of days I just couldn't make it. I couldn't make it. You know, eating so much the night before, you know, I just couldn't pull myself up to get ready for work. So I would call off. And I would call off and just say, I'm not feeling well. And I said it so much that my supervisor said, well, what's wrong? You know, and I had the nerve to have a little attitude and just say, I'm not feeling well. Like, I didn't want to give him anything specific, like, you know, my stomach or my head. I didn't want to give him anything specific. So, you know, I cost that company, you know, a lot of money. And, you know, with the food aside, I'll just wrap up by saying with the food aside, you know, I don't have a food problem. I have a living problem. And so I just couldn't cope. I just couldn't cope with life. I couldn't, you know, deal with my coworkers. And so I'm just a totally different person. And I could just relate to the previous share about applying for a job 3 times, but in recovery, she finally got it. So I'm just really grateful for this program. It's a privilege and honor to be at a meeting and to be a part of this wonderful, wonderful program. And so with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much for your service.
Thank you, Dorita P. Lynn S., please share with us.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Lynn S., a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. And there's a few lines that stick out to me. Of course, this chapter refers to alcoholics, sick people, deranged men. And then it says, he should not be made a favorite. should not have a disproportionate amount of time. The right kind of man, the kind who recovers, will not want this sort of thing. He will not impose. Far from it, he will work like the devil and thank you to his dying day. And I've been retired for 3 or 4 years now, but what this is speaking to me about is my relationship with God, sort of in one sense. And I have a new attitude. I have been saved from a living death. And that's just striking me. And I know when I did work at my last couple of jobs, I had that attitude because I was in program. And I was so grateful. And I still suffered, you know, emotionally from a lot of the character defects that I had. But really, to be so grateful and to know that I have a new attitude, I have been saved from a living death. If I approach everything in my life today with just that attitude of that sentence and my gratefulness to God and to those around me, I'll have a better day and so will everybody around me. And I really think that's the point of recovery. We are so blessed. And I'm so grateful that I was in recovery for my last couple of jobs and that I have been able to make amends for what I needed to. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lynn S. Lisa J. R., please share with us.
Good morning, everybody, and forgive me, Lynn S. I was unmuted earlier and did not hear the moderator. Sorry about that. Grateful to be here and grateful to be studying these chapters. Lisa J. R. from Baltimore. You know, I've been both the employer and the employee, and in my eating career, I, you know, most of the time was able to white knuckle it through the day while I was at work. I still, it probably affected my productivity because of my, you know, that spring was getting wound up, you know, wound down before I got home and all bets were off with the food. But I've had a severe alcoholic working for me, and my goodness, I totally understood his malady, and, you know, he was able to get some help, but it took a long time for him to diagnose himself an alcoholic. And one of the things I'm grateful for studying these chapters, you know, they help us in all of our relationship issues. And where, you know, we've come a long way in business, you know, because now that recovery, quote unquote, is kind of a cheeky, chic word, the rite of passage for a lot of young people having to had gone in some form of recovery or another. You know, businesses understand a little bit more than they did back when this was penned. However, individuals in those businesses don't understand. And, you know, so placing this book in somebody's hands is valuable. I've given AA books to pastors. I've given, you know, I pass a lot of these books out to people that aren't necessarily alcoholics, but the people that deal with people that are alcoholics or having other problems such as this. And, you know, in the book, there is a solution. No, you know, unless you're an addict, you can't wrap your brain around that paragraph that says the fact that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost their choice of drink. And Harlan said it beautifully this morning that people can't understand why I would have to have the fourth cupcake, or in his case, it was the fourth cookie. But yeah, you know, it's hard for a person to understand that, but, you know, it's a valuable tool in the hand of the employer, in the hand of the pastor, in the hand of anyone who's dealing with personalities, with different people, because invariably there's going to be an addict in the bunch. And so I'm so grateful that I've gone through this work and I've been able to see the value in handing this book to people. And I'm so grateful for all of you this morning. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Okay, who else would like to share?
Joel P.
Joel.
John K.
John K.
Ravine C.
I'm sorry, I didn't get your first name.
Ravine, R-A-V-I-N, Ravine C.
Okay, thank you, Ravine.
Kelly T.
Hello? Who is that?
Kelly T.
Kelly T. Okay, one more.
Kathleen O.
Okay, great, Kathleen O. Okay, so we have Joel P., John K., Ravine C., Kelly T., and Kathleen O. Please share with us, Joel.
Good morning. I am a food addict, addicted to more, and I'm a full-time RVer presently located in Smyrna, Tennessee. And the thing that the one sentence that jumped out at me in this reading is, but alcoholism, well, they just don't believe they have it. And how I translate that sentence is, but food addiction, well, I just don't believe I have it. And what I get reminded of is I've probably lost 900 pounds in losing the same 30 pounds for year after year after year, losing, gaining it. So I can relate to that. They don't know, I don't know that this is a disease. And whenever I'm feeling any kind of aloneness or fear or tired, the first thing that comes to my mind is I want to eat. And my daily struggle is, do I want to follow my food plan? Do I want to stay abstinent? Do I want to lead a spiritual life? And I struggle with that every day. And it's in my time in OA. I'm not in for a long time. I'm actually a short time, and each day is getting better and better. And I appreciate being at this meeting. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Joe P. Please keep coming back. And John K., please share.
Good morning. My name is John Kiernan. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Thank God we have passed that time where companies and insurance companies now understand that this is a disease. You know, I needed it, back in the dark ages when I got sober. I went through a detox, and my insurance actually paid for it. I remember them saying, we'll pay for it once, we won't pay for it over and over, but we'll pay for it once, which they did. And thank God that we've hit a point where that happens, and companies know, and especially large companies have HR departments who are given lots of classes about the fact that addiction is a disease and that there's many addictions out there, not just alcohol or drugs. It's so funny. I was at a symposium all day yesterday at UCLA, having to do with drug and alcohol addiction, and a lot of this came up about insurance companies and you know how they've gotten so much better about understanding this, and especially here in California, mental health problems have what's called a parity diagnosis, which means that they should be given the exact same amount of weight as any physical problem, and so it's good. When it comes to my food, I can tell you that my disease, in a lot of ways, and I think it happens to a lot of us, we overcompensate in other areas because we feel so lousy about ourselves in so many of the other areas, and as a result, in a lot of times, we become actually great employees, even though we're killing ourselves. I know my old AA sponsor was a chairman of the board of, I won't even say the name of the company because it's a very, very well-known international company, and he joked, we would talk, and he'd say, yeah, I felt so lousy about myself, I was an overachiever, and even then, as chairman of the board, I was sure any day they were going to come drag me out as a fraud, you know? And but with us, I think we do overperform sometimes in that area, but the other thing is that I think with compulsive eating, the ratio of damage concerning the actual addiction versus the damage as a result of our horrible attitudes, is the ratio is different. I'll, I had so many lousy attitudes, and everybody else would, I was working harder than everybody else, and nobody understood me, and I was so underappreciated, and all the other stuff that I spent a lot of time and fourth steps on to work on made me not a great employee. I certainly didn't work well with others and all that stuff. And so I can look and say, you know, that was to the detriment of the companies I worked for over the years, was my character defects. And now, I mean, luckily, I think even though I work for myself now, I'd be a much better employee because I am not the center of the universe at that company anymore, and I would be a better team player. And so part of the of looking when we think of the damage we've done to the companies we work for is not just, oh, did I take time off because I was overeating or, you know, didn't feel like going to work, but how about all the other incidental attitudes that I brought to that table that were not good team attitudes. Anyway, with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, John Kay. Ravine C., please share with us.
I'm sorry, did you call my name Ravine C.?
Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you. Yes, my name is Ravine C. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm on day 17 of my 30 and 30, and I really appreciate you guys doing this meeting because I'm on the road and I didn't know if I'd be able to get to a meeting, so thank you. It's funny, I actually was brought into OA by someone who was in AA. My business partner, who I would say is probably the hardest working, smartest person I've ever met. And he was 14 years sober in AA. And the reason I joined OA is because my eating had hindered my productivity. We're business partners in a startup, and the last binge I went on a month ago, luckily I've been abstinent for 2 weeks now, which is fantastic. I'm so happy and so happy that LA has provided that for me. But the last time I went on a binge, it was a 3-week binge, and I'd been really, really healthy. I'd been, you know, working out, looking good. All it took was one bowl of cereal, and it completely, I don't know what happened over 3 weeks. I gained, you know, all the weight I lost, and he had been away, you know, he had seen me right before thinking I was in, you know, great shape, looking great. Left, came back, saw where I was. I was in total denial. We, you know, I kind of broke down to him ultimately, and we talked about it, and he was the one who said, hey, man, the way you are with food, all the stuff you're describing is the way I am with alcohol. You know, you should go to OA. And I listened to his advice, and I did, and I'm so grateful to him for that. So, yeah, it's just, it's so true that the people who are, in our program or any other, you know, 12-step program, oftentimes they're amazing, they're amazing, hardworking individuals. And I can already tell right now, the strength I'm getting from being in this program is going to make me even better and make me, much better, even better than before. So, I definitely relate to everything that's being said. And I love that, that there is a truth that, you know, regardless of what you have gone through and, you know, where you've been, and no matter how terrible it is, there's always the ability to come back from that and to live with it and to also grow from it. So thank you. That's my share.
Thank you very much, Ravine C. Kelly T., please share with us.
Good morning. My name is Kelly T., New York City. Thank you for your service today. I'm really grateful for this chapter. It brings me back on my lowest points in my recovery. I was working for another boss at that time, and she would warn me, Kelly, go to OA, get help, get help. She knew about my bulimia, she knew everything, and she was always worried about me. And my supervisor, she just gave me so many chances that one day I just left my work area to work out at the gym because I couldn't deal with the pressure. I'm a perfectionist. I want to people please everyone, but I wasn't taking care of Kelly. It was all about everybody else. And I ate over it, over and over. I stole about it. I purged. I did everything. And she didn't fire me. She just gave me a 2 week of no pay and absence. And when I came back, that was like one of my lowest points. But she gave me an opportunity. She saw the good in me before the disease got that bad. She saw the hardworking side of me and have faith in me. Something that I didn't see in myself until I worked the program and saw what was really going on with me. That the food is a symptom. I was basically binging to hide my emotions because I couldn't deal with my past, with the trauma, with people pleasing everyone, trying to make everybody happy, but not Kelly, not taking care of my health. And till this day, I am so grateful for her because right now I have a stable job. Because if she would have fired me, God knows where I would have been. God knows. And just to have the opportunity, it was like God put her there as my little guardian angel to give me another chance to repent myself and to really work the program and to surrender and do the work. And so, you know, it's going to be 2 years in April that I'm abstinent, completely abstinent in vision. And it's just a gift, you know. And this chapter always gets to me because it reminded me how I treated her and everybody else, you know, around me. Because the food, just eating doesn't only affect me. It affects my surroundings, how I treated everyone at the work area. And I try to make amends, and she didn't want it, you know, it would have made harm, so she stopped me from making the amends. But I'm just grateful that I was willing to set things right, to do my part, keep my side of the street clean. And I'm just grateful. Thank you for listening. I pass.
Thank you, Kelly G. Kathleen O., please share with us.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, everyone on the line. This is Kathleen O., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. You know, this chapter is attempting to explain to people who don't understand addiction, who don't understand the disease, particularly employers, what it's like and what it's about. And I know before I ever saw this book, I would look at alcoholics and think, you know, what is wrong with them? Why do they get drunk, drive, get arrested, get put in jail, only to go out and do it all over again? It doesn't make any sense. You know, why don't they just stop doing that? And then when I came into program and, you know, saw this book, it's like, oh, I have the same thing, only it's with food. And, you know, why do I keep doing the same thing over? I wouldn't get arrested or put in jail, but I certainly beat my body up to where it was, you know, just a mess. And so, you know, and also I think when it comes to compulsive overeating, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are obese, and I have some family members that are like that, but they're not compulsive overeaters. They're not the real thing. I've watched them eat. They just eat the wrong thing, and they don't exercise, and they don't take care of themselves, but they're constantly eating nothing but the wrong food. And so a lot of people can get overweight and obese, but it's not necessarily that they need this program or it's going to help them. But for someone like me who gained and lost weight over and over and over again, keep trying to figure it out, why can't I keep this off? Why do I start eating again? This was a miracle to be able to have 14 years of not being in that cycle. And yet this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. There are times where, you know, I'll suddenly have this thought, hey, wouldn't this be good? And, oh, I can control this. And if those thoughts come up, I know I am not working this program the way I need to. I'm not staying in step one and remembering that I'm powerless. And if I don't work it, I'm going to forget I'm powerless. And this new attitude that they talk about is amazing. When I worked and I was in the disease, I spent a lot of time eating. I spent a lot of time, you know, feeding drama that would happen in the workplace. place, starting some of it myself, big waste of time. And once I got these steps, it's like you do get a lot more done because, for me, I no longer need to be in the drama. I don't suck into it. If someone tries to suck me into it, I give a response of, I understand that's frustrating, but this person has good points too. And then it just stops people. So, we do get a lot more done. And it really, I'm just so grateful for all of you on this line. I need this meeting. I need listening to all the great shares. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen O. We have time for two or three more shares. Who would like to share?
Gina R. Therese
Gina
P.
R. Therese P. And one more?
Cindy D.
Cindy D. Thank you all. Okay, Gina R., please go ahead.
Good morning, Kathy. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and I live in Green Valley, Arizona. The concept or the part that jumped out to me was at the bottom of 148 where it talks about the waste. Alcoholism may be causing your organization considerable damage in its waste of time, men, and reputation. We think you are sensible when we urge that you stop this waste and give your worthwhile man a chance. For so many years, I characterized my work environment. I would say things like, I work in a toxic environment, and it gave me license inside my own head to do all manner of things that this disease fed to me. And I unwittingly, for many, many years, took it up and did it. And then for other years, I knowingly partnered with aspects of this disease that continue to cause harm and waste. When I was able to finally get my focus reoriented and off of looking at the toxicity or the waste that I saw in everybody else and on myself, and through this process of identifying those character defects and really getting down to what are those core beliefs that are still getting triggered and allowing me to behave in the ism, which is I see me, and engaging in selfishness, self-seeking, and dishonest and fear-based behavior. Once I was able to do that, I could finally get the aha, which was I am part of this toxic environment. I am actually contributing to the toxicity here. Because my disease was food for the majority of my career, people weren't paying attention to that like they were alcohol or drug abuse. And in my particular employment, that was really overlooked as well. There was so much codependency going on and people making excuses for other people or just shunning them and not trying to extend a hand for help. I have not been working. I've been in kind of a semi-retired situation for the last year. And so this isn't relating to me as directly as it is in the book. And then but prior to that, I did run my own business and I was able to behave in a way that was more recovered and truly help people and help myself. So with that, I pass with just the concept of the waste we have to recognize in ourselves first. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Gina R. Excuse me. Therese P., please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Therese P. in Montana. And what I've been sitting here thinking about is that concept about identifying in or identifying out. And I can identify out really easily. My disease can get a hold of me. And I can start thinking about things like, you know, how intelligent I am. And maybe that's the reason why,
I don't do well in these work situations, which, you know, I mean, the fact is I really don't play that well with others. In my last job, there was a lot of, I would see an injustice, what I perceived to be an injustice, and I would go about and start whispering in people's ears and causing disharmony and disunity instead of contributing to a unified and harmonious work environment. And that's just something that my disease does. The other thing that I was thinking about was that, you know, it is my dream to have my own business, to start my own company. And I have a lot of ideas about how to do that. But if I don't identify in, if I don't concede to my innermost self that I have this disease, then I will not be able to accomplish my dreams, because then I'm running the show and God doesn't have any room to get in and do what needs to be done. So today I'm trying to set aside everything that I think I know and have a new experience. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Therese P. And Cindy D., you'll be our last share today.
Good morning. This is Cindy D., gratefully recovered in Texas. And the sentence that really resonated for me and that I've been thinking about this morning is, they have a new attitude and they have been saved from a living death. And I was thinking back to when I was in my disease and in the food, I can remember consciously thinking, oh, if I just eat, I'll feel better. Those feelings will go away. And I was talking with a fellow last night, and we were talking about how that fog would come over us when we would reach for the food, and it would relieve us of the feelings. And it was actually a feeling of being, of the feelings being pushed down. And I see that now as a living death, because what I am able to experience in recovery is life, and feelings are life for me. And I heard earlier in the earlier meeting that by the grace of God, I can be comfortable with the uncomfortable. And that's really true today. And I'm so grateful that I am able to experience my feelings, deal with them in productive and positive ways, accept opportunities to learn. And most importantly, I'm so grateful to be able to be of service and to be with other people and have relationships in my life that are good and strong and not a source of pain. And so I just wanted to share that and tell everyone how grateful I am that this phone meeting is here and that you're all here. And I hope everyone has a blessed day. And thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you very much, Cindy D. We do have about a minute and a half. Would anyone like to share briefly?
Michelle J.
Sure. Go ahead, Michelle.
Well, I'm listening to the program, and of course, it's really wonderful. And I think about the relationships between people that think that they don't have this disease, or that the organization doesn't, or whatever. And I'm new to the program 6 weeks. And as I was listening to Julie, it really, really affected me. And I hope that she's available for a talk later on. If you are, Julie, I need your number. But totally new to OA. And for the first 4 weeks, I was on, I hear, the pink cloud. And I thought, oh, maybe I don't have it. Maybe I'm just fine. And then I crashed and burned last week. And so on. Ooh, it's real. And our brains or our pride or our insecurities, if it be in an organization or in ourselves, we can easily convince ourselves that we're okay and that we can try it without the program, or we can do it without this or that. And I'm just so grateful that that Vision for You is here and the program is here and the fellowship is here, because it's real. And we, or those around us, bosses, we need to look at this issue in the face and just realize most of us are seeking happiness. Most of us are seeking something to grab hold of. And for us, for me, it's food. And anyways, I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Michelle G. And it is now time to close this meeting. Thank you, everyone who was here, who shared. And a special thank you to CJH, Penny LC, Julie EB, John K, and Jordan L for helping me lead this meeting. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164 and follow that with the Serenity Prayer. John K., would you please read A Vision for You?
I certainly will, John Kiernan, recovered compulsive eater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.